Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Tim Dillon Show. Recording minutes, maybe hours after Trump convicted on all 34 counts of falsifying business records in the hush money trial with Stormy Daniels, the porn star that Trump was plowing, and he paid off this woman with some dirty money. And this has been the trial that he's been going through. I, full disclosure, live a few blocks away. I have a home a few blocks away from the, I don't live there. I don't live anywhere. So I'm going to say that immediately, because that people always say to me, they go, where do you live? It's like, why do you, what is that? What is that? It's like a crazy question. People go, where do you live? I'm like, I don't know, man. I'm figuring it out. Like, I'm figuring it out. But Trump, I have a condo that I occasionally go to a few blocks away from the courthouse where they delivered this conviction, which was not a huge surprise because it is New York. And Trump was probably guilty. I don't think anyone imagines that he wasn't guilty. I think here's why people are upset about this, and here's why I think ultimately this helps Trump. This is my analysis. Most people know Trump's kind of a criminal. He's been open about it. That's kind of why people like him. He goes, I game the system. I'm rich. I get away with shit. I do what I want. I pay people off. He said that. He came out and said it. He's like, I pay people off. I play the game. That was very refreshing. Dave Chappelle did that monologue on SNL talking about how groundbreaking it was that Donald Trump like came out and was like, hey, yeah, you know why I know how corrupt everything is? Because I'm the guy. I'm one of those people who's been doing it for years. I get it. So I don't think there's anyone out there that's like, would Trump have paid off a porn star? Would he have done that? Would Trump have? I think everyone knows that. I don't think anyone cares. I don't care. I think paying people off's fine, to be honest, to shut up. I don't think that's a big problem, morally. Of all the ways you could get someone to shut up, you have killing them, threatening them, blackmailing them. Paying them off is by far the best way to get them to shut up. It is by far the least of all the things in our political system. I mean, the three dudes at Boeing who were like, hey, maybe there's a crack in the goodbye, they're all gone. How nice would it have been if they just got hush money? It's not even that, like, no one's horrified that someone paid somebody else off to shut up. I think people don't like the idea that in an incredibly corrupt system, where you have almost everyone that you are aware of in the political sphere in this country is some kind of criminal. Everybody is some kind of criminal. It's why they are there. We all know that. It's why they got elected in the first place. They are some kind of criminal. Everybody in the political system at a high level at one point or another has looked the other way or has paid some kind of hush money to somebody. It's just a fact. I mean, everybody has done it, and we all know that. And the people that don't do it and the people that refuse to do it are flushed down the toilet. They get rid of them. They get rid of them. It's just the way things work. And I think people get angry at what they view as an inherent, like, contradiction when you have the federal government and this now the state government, but this is the federal government in New York. I believe this was federal. But it also could have been the state. I'm unsure.
It was federal. It was in federal.
Yeah, court. Federal. That's what I thought, because that's where the condo that I occasionally bump into is. People are wondering, they're going, this is a politically motivated prosecution. And it doesn't mean that Trump is innocent. It means that there's zero interest in finding out any of this information about any of the other people in our system. We don't care. We don't see any of these things being applied evenly. There's zero interest. In fact, when the Epstein docs came out and Clinton's name is all over them, the whole media, they were basically like, listen, yes, he's in all of these documents. Yes, he's mentioned 50 times. Yes, he's been on the plane. But that doesn't mean that he did anything that is wrong. They didn't even, forget legal. They were basically like, this guy is innocent. The media's job when the Epstein docs came out was to go out and say, nobody who's mentioned in these docs did anything wrong. They're all innocent. They're all innocent. And again, it's like, go sell that to your wife. Go sell that to anybody that you're mentioned 50 times in the deposition of a human trafficking victim. So there's zero interest in that. There's zero interest in getting to the bottom of that. Nobody really wants to get to the bottom of that. Nobody really goes like, well, that's interesting. What's going on over there? Why were all these politicians? Where are all these tapes? What happened? I don't get it. All these people that were being recorded, where are those tapes? Who were those people? Nobody really cares about that. Nobody's really interested in that. And that's just one example of all of the things people could be interested in. Nobody's really cares, but this case is explicitly brought for the purposes of trying to get this guy on something. Because his popularity is amazing considering all of the issues he's had. And there doesn't seem to be any way to stop that. These trials, these cases that they're throwing at him, you know, the entirety of his presidency was Russia. And none of that panned out. You know, this idea that he was an asset of Russia. He was installed by the Russian government. You know, none of that worked. You couldn't get him. James Comey, Robert Mueller, all these Mueller, whatever. All these guys, all these special prosecutors. Nobody was able to really deliver the goods. So that's where it started. It started that he was an agent of a foreign government who got elected in an election that was manipulated by that government. And he's now in the Oval Office and he's carrying out the agenda of Vladimir Putin and Russia in America. That's how it started. This is a Manchurian candidate. This is a guy that's in there, and we don't know how this happened. This happened because Russia went on Facebook and made everybody's aunt racist, and then Trump got elected, and now he's doing the bidding of Russia. It was the beginning of it. That was the beginning. And that went on for years, and it was all his cronies and everyone he was around, they're all beholden to Russia and Russian money. And that was the narrative. And there were people that were deeply skeptical of that on the left and the right, by the way. The far left, not the mainstream left. They were with it. And even a lot of the mainstream right kind of went along with it. They were kind of like, well, maybe this is. Now, we finally, it's years later, and what we finally got the guy on is that he paid off a porn star to keep quiet. He paid off a porn star. You know, again, if somebody, is that like a black mark on his character? Isn't that his character? Isn't that Donald Trump's character? Like, what would you think Donald Trump would be doing? If you didn't even know Donald Trump and a guy who walked by you in a pinstripe suit with golden hair on Fifth Avenue and someone pointed to you and said, that guy paid off a porn star, you wouldn't even respond with words. You just like take a sip of your coffee and smile because it's exactly what you think that person would do. I don't think anybody's shocked by that. I don't think anybody's like, now I guess this might have an effect on the election. I don't know. People said it when I was watching Karl Rove, who is George W. Bush's guy. He was his guy. They called him the architect, Karl Rove. And Karl Rove is basically like, a lot of the polls that are out say people will be less likely to vote for Trump if he's convicted. But Karl Rove also said if he's exonerated, he's Teflon. But he was convicted. I don't know if this is going to have a huge impact on the election. I know that he's going to be sentenced. Rarely with this charge would you get prison. I don't know if he's going to get prison. I don't know if they're going to try to make an example out of him. I think if they put him in prison, you're going to be looking at, you know, again, his website is crashed because of donations in the last hour. People are like, again, this has galvanized the hardcore Trump people. And if he goes to prison, the Secret Service goes too. I read this earlier, that they will be protecting him in prison. And as our friend, the great Ray Kump, said, he might run the whole operation from the can, like the movie Donnie Brasco, when the guy goes, Rusty's running the whole thing from the can. I got Brooklyn, Sonny Red's got Little Italy. I mean, that might be it. Trump might be the president of the United States from prison. He might just run the country from prison. He will lose no supporters if that happens. He will gain many supporters. You are going to see, I think, a surge in support for him. A lot of people in this country have been to jail. A lot of them. A lot of people in this country have been to jail. And I'm watching them on social media. They kind of like, there's, by the way, I'm telling you right now, if you just want to look at cool, if you want to look at who's the cooler candidate, the guy who doesn't know where he is, or the guy who's maybe doing like 2 months in jail, the guy who's doing 2 months in jail is the cooler candidate, no question. And Trump's going to go in there and he's going to act like Nelson Mandela. He's going to be his version of Nelson Mandela in prison. This is going to be the best thing that has ever happened to him and to memes, really. But also, Tim, let's watch some of these videos. This is outside the courthouse today. Many people, very emotional. Here's the thing about Trump. People, he's really in their blood. This is a religious experience for these people. Let's take a listen.
Jesus and Lord.
If you're not watching this, this is just Asians in MAGA hats crying. I just wish he was exonerated. I just want to see happy Asians. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to see Asian women crying, like older Asian ladies in MAGA hats crying. How fun would it have been to just see them happy a few blocks from my occasional pied-à-terre. It would have been nice to see them. Any other, we got some of people getting angry there, people.
This was before, yeah.
Are people getting violent or what's going on? Is go up to blacks for Trump.
Yeah.
Let's see what they're up to.
Trump. I am the Elamite, and I'm here to defend Trump. And they're using the fact that they say that he's a racist to do all these lies and call him a treasonous man, when in actuality they're accusing him of what they are guilty of. So my job is to reveal the darkness that is now trying to overtake the
light. This is a big, by the way, I think convicting him of this is a big mistake. I think this is going to go the other way. I think he's going to galvanize supporters. I think this was a big mistake. We're going to listen here to Robert De Niro, who took it upon himself a day before the verdict to just have a press conference and talk about Trump. And everybody's shouting at him like, fuck you. De Niro, you know, is a big part of this whole area, Tribeca. The legend is that Robert De Niro was training in an empty warehouse in Tribeca for the movie Raging Bull. And he looked around at Tribeca and he goes, God, this area is great. Why isn't there anything down here? What's going on? And it was all these empty kind of abandoned warehouses. And then he opened up Nobu and Tribeca Grill, and he's a big real estate owner down here. And, you know, and he's become very passionate about politics for whatever reason. He's 80.
Yeah, he's up there.
He's
yeah.
80. He's got a kid, a lot of kids now, right? Young kids.
He just had a child, yeah.
He just had a child at 80 years old. So that's who we're dealing with. By the way, all of these people are Trump. All of these people, this guy just had a one-year-old child at 80. Mm-hmm. And he's going out as he's the sane, rational voice of reason. The octogenarian new dad. Robert De Niro, everyone.
Democrats, you are gangsters. You are gangsters. Fuck you.
You're a new punk. You're a softie. You're a nobody. Your movies suck. You're trash.
Why would you, after a great, by the way, after, like, what is he trying to do here? What is this guy thinking is going to happen? Like, actors sometimes just believe they have the powers that the people write in the scripts for them. What does he think is going to happen? Like, he's going to go down to this courthouse. He's going to give this rousing speech. And then all the people in the MAGA hats are going to turn around and go, you know, Robert De Niro's right. We've been had. Trump's a con. Bobby De Niro's right. That guy was at Casino. He's the guy from Goodfellas. So they're all telling De Niro, your movies suck. You're washed up, which, by the way, it is a dose of, you know, he needs to hear that. Everyone needs to hear you're washed up. It's a fun insult to throw it like an older person, because it's invariably true. There's nothing. I wanted to go down there and yell very specific. What did you do about my father? Do you need money? So you have Robert De Niro getting literally thrown around by the MAGA people, just totally getting trashed by these people. There's like a ton of cops protecting Robert De Niro from the MAGA. By the way, people are getting like lit on fire in the subway, thrown on the tracks. There was a machete attack at the Times Square McDonald's. And all of these police are on like detail, Robert De Niro detail, protecting this old guy who's just screaming and yelling outside of a courthouse. Robert De Niro is not involved in the case. Want to remind everybody, Trump did not pay off Robert De Niro. Robert De Niro is not an employee of the federal government. He has zero reason to be there. And then the cops are all like helping Robert De Niro across the street as he gets totally pilloried by the Trump people. It is fun, though. You know, if you've ever read Bonfire of the Vanities, one of my favorite books, I'm a lifelong New Yorker. I love Tom Wolfe. And that book is about a banker. I believe it's Sherman McCoy. Yeah, and He's driving through the Bronx, and he hits a young African-American child and then thinks he's gotten away with it, but he hasn't gotten away with it. They trace it back to him because he makes a mistake. When the police come and ask him, about his car, he, you know, makes this kind of mistake. He says the car's not in the building, that he's having it tuned up or something. And the police then find the car. It's pretty routine how it happens. There weren't, you know, he could have gotten away with it probably had he not made that mistake, had he just showed them the car. There wasn't really scratches on the car or anything. The point is, the book culminates in a trial where you have all these New York characters just all over the place. It becomes a big civil rights issue. You have that. You have this guy's life spins out of control. It's Tom Wolfe's best book. The guy's life spins out of control. He's this, you know, master of the universe, Wall Street banker, lives on Park Avenue, has a wife. I believe he was cheating on her when he hit the kid in the Bronx. And then his life just descends into chaos. And that's kind of the vibe of this trial a little bit, except Tom Wolfe never would have been able to imagine this scene, or maybe he would have, that the president of the United States, Donald Trump, is being tried in a hush money case with an OnlyFans model named Stormy Daniels. But it's a very right out of Bonfire the Vanities thing. And outside the courthouse, you have a crying Asian women screaming. You have Blacks for Trump. You have Robert De Niro, a, dare I say, washed up actor who's 80 years old with a one-year-old child. And instead of being home with that child, he's now part of the Biden-Harris campaign. And Robert De Niro is screaming in front of the court. It is a scene. And by the way, I witnessed some of it. On foot, I did witness some of this scene. It does feel like New York at its best. It really does. It feels like New York at its best. People going, fuck you. You're washed up. Your movies suck. How great is that? A guy with the accent. And you know that guy loves Goodfellas. You know that guy doesn't mean that. That guy loves Goodfellas. That guy doesn't love Goodfellas? What are you, nuts? But he hasn't made a Goodfellas in a while. And when that guy goes, your movies suck. And these people, they, you know. So Donald Trump convicted, I think, goes the other way. I'm going to make a prediction that this was a grave error. Bringing this case was a grave error. I could be wrong. Maybe I will be wrong. I do not know. But I will tell you this. I think people get more excited about Trump now than they have been. In keeping with older people who are about to leave the planet, just letting people have it. A guy I've always kind of liked, Richard Dreyfuss, goes on a rant at a Jaws screening. Now, every year they have this Jaws Fest. And in this type of, and I don't know if this is technically Jaws Fest, but Jaws is widely considered to be one of the greatest movies ever made, and Richard Dreyfuss is the star. We all know this. Richard Dreyfuss goes to a Massachusetts theater and is going to speak before the film about purportedly the movie. So instead, you have Richard Dreyfuss, who's, again, it's like Bobby De Niro. It's like every day's a gift at that age. Every day's a gift. And they want to just pop off and tell you where their heads are at. So he goes, and I wish we had this rant, but we don't have it, right?
There might be video. Oh, you know, because they took it down. But hold on, yeah.
See if you can find it.
Oh, this is it. This is him walking out.
Oh, this is great. By the way, this is a real treat. Richard Dreyfuss, and these people don't know what's about to hit them. He's this is the star of Jaws, but he's had enough with some things, some cultural trends, and I guess this might be it. He's getting a big ovation from the people. He's got a cane. He looks good. But he's getting ready. You can feel it. You can feel it. He's getting ready to unleash. And unleash he does. He's about to unleash here. Stop this for a second. They had to issue an apology to people. By the way, if you see someone over a certain age speak, the theater should never issue an apology. You should never apologize for an old person or an elderly person. That this is their time now to speak. This really, it may be a lot of things you don't love hearing, but there should absolutely not, the theater should not engage in like a mea culpa for this guy. Is he speaking in this clip at all?
I'm gonna skip to the end. Here we go.
The book is called One Thought Scares Me. And it's about the fact that 50 years ago, without telling anybody, they took civics out of the curriculum of all public schools in America, which means we have no knowledge of who the hell we are. And if we don't get it back soon, we're all gonna die.
Now, here's what's great. They're all still with him because it's a general vague statement. And this is what old people love to do. And this is why I love old people. Old people, right before the end of their life, will always invariably make some comment about how 50 years ago, 30 years ago, 40 years, without telling anyone, they took away something that we needed. And in this case, it's civics. And they are teaching forms of civics, by the way. They are teaching that, but it's hilarious. He's like there and he goes, if we don't get it back, we're all going to die. Everyone's with him because they're like, I bet he's dunking on Trump. Like they don't know what's coming next. This is why old people are great. They're unpredictable. They don't even really know what's going to happen. He barely knows what's coming next.
Are not the last generation of Americans. And you know exactly what I'm talking about.
So sadly, Richard Dreyfuss, we do not have him on screen saying the rant. He went on an anti-trans rant at the Jaws premiere event. And we don't have him saying that, tragically, but we do have the news story about it and the people who were affected.
People started leaving the theater wow. in droves, and that maybe the reason why there isn't actual video footage of this is that people were so disgusted that they didn't even think to take out their phone. They thought about just getting out of there. Take a listen.
Many people walked out, including myself and my partner. Numerous other patrons who were at the Cabot also found it unacceptable. There were scores of people filing down the stairs and out onto the sidewalk.
Well, that's after he said, we have some quotes from his, he went off. From there, however, Kerry said Dreyfuss went off targeting his nuts co-star Barbara Streisand. He began to say a lot of sexist things about her, about all women. They're stupid, they shouldn't have any power, etc. Other accounts say that Dreyfuss accused women of being passive, which is why the 1987 film Nuts sucked. Then he just kept going with homophobic and racist comments. He insulted the Me Too movement. Another member of the crowd said Dreyfuss said that society, quote, shouldn't be listening to some 10-year-old who says they want to be a boy instead of a girl. Kerry then said the atmosphere in the theater quickly soured with many booing the star and some walking out. Now, don't turn into an angry mob, Dreyfuss told the crowd, according to Kerry. Let this guy go off. You know, the theater should not have apologized for him. They should say, Richard came in hot. That's what they should say. Richard Dreyfuss came in hot, and we have no regrets. You got to live the way you live. He's got minutes before he leaves this planet. Minutes. And he wants, everybody's going to do that at the end. There's nobody at the end of their career who has any public persona, like any form of public life. Anyone with access to a microphone is going to do this before the end. There's almost no point to having money and being famous if at the end of it you can't just alienate everyone before you die. Everybody's got to get it. He's up there screaming about Barbara Streisand. This is his right. It's like De Niro's right. As annoying as they are, they are in the twilight of their life. There is nothing better than watching people that you've adored for your entire life come out and disgust you, disappoint you, enrage you to the point where you're like, get out of here. There's nothing better than that. I wish if I have a long enough career where I'm in some theater right before I die, I want to walk everybody. I want everybody to go, what the fuck was this? I used to listen to that guy. This sucks. Fuck you. That's the last thing I want to hear. The last thing I want to hear is, fuck you. You suck now. That's full circle in this country. That's having a career that comes full circle. This story interested me. I thought this was interesting. A Utah high school football teammate turned down a summer job that was actually a covert coup attempt, I believe in like the Congo, in the African Congo. The friend of a prominent Congolese opposition leader. And let me just say before we go into this story, I know that a lot of people, you know, with the AI images of like all eyes on Rafa and pray for Sudan, which I have criticized because they're silly and they look like it's a new show on NBC. Tuesdays at 8, all about Rafa. Like it feels, even CNN quoted me, because it does feel silly. Not to say you shouldn't be upset about those things. We're losing focus with the Sudan and the Congo stuff, I feel. I really do. I can get upset about this Palestine, but you start throwing in Sudan and the Congo, it doesn't work. I start going, oh, yeah, everything's fucked. And then I just turn it all off. You got to focus. I can't handle everything. You can't be like Sudan, Congo. Like, they are now listing everything going on the planet. I can't be enraged about that. Stick with something. The friend of a prominent Congolese opposition leader's son said he turned down a six-figure offer to travel there from the U.S. as part of a family security detail in what turned out to be a failed coup. Marcel Malanga, the 21-year-old son of an eccentric coup leader, Christian Malanga, was detained by Congolese forces Sunday morning, along with a former classmate from their hometown of West Jordan, Utah, after his father was killed in a shootout while resisting arrest. His high school football teammate, Tyler Thompson, 21, was one of the two other Americans arrested after an ill-fated attack on the presidential palace in Kinshasa. Six people were dead and dozens arrested, including three Americans following the attack and another on the residence of a close ally of President Felix Tshisekedi. The Congolese army spokesperson, Brigadier General Sylvain Akanj, said. Daniel Gonzalez, a former teammate of the two Utah residents caught up in the foiled coup, told the Associated Press that Marcel had offered him $50,000 to $100,000 to spend 4 months in the Congo as a security guard for his politician father. The 22-year-old FedEx worker said he strongly considered it, but said it lacked concrete details. He ultimately declined so he could spend the summer with his girlfriend. I feel really sad for Tyler and Marcel, but at the end of the day, I just can't be grateful. I just can be grateful that I didn't go because I'd be stuck in the same scary situation. That is great, by the way, to have your son have a summer job and that summer job is overthrowing a government in Africa. A friend of mine's father, who I've talked about on the show before, Bud Munster, said that if you're just a white guy with some money, you can kind of go, and I don't know if that's the case with this guy. I don't know if he's white or not. But you can go to, like, these places like Africa or South America, and you could really, like, fuck around a little bit and have fun. like try to overthrow a government. Like, this is kind of cool for like a summer trip that you went there. Now it didn't work. Certain things don't work. But the idea that like this guy's trying to overthrow an African government with his kid, and he said to his kid's friends, why don't you get a couple of your loser friends and you could come over and try to overthrow this government too. It is crazy to think about that that's his summer. I don't know what exactly you learn from this. That's maybe the issue is you don't really learn. You learn about trusting people. Like if you go over there, first of all, I never wanted to work as a person. That's why I do this. I always, poor people were always the ones that worked. You always see the poor working. They're always fiddling and fidgeting. They're late all the time. I was one of them for years. They work so hard and no one cares. And so I never wanted to work. It never interested me. That's why I do this. And rich people are kind of never really working. They're always doing something. They're always like kind of like taking a phone call, going to a lunch. But so I would have turned this down immediately. They're like, you're going to be a security guard. I mean, I wouldn't do that anywhere. And certainly not in the Congo. Like if my best friend was like, you know, my dad loves you. He wants you to be a security guard in the Congo. I'd be like, fuck off, man. It's the summer. It's the summer. Like we're not going to, I'm not going over to the African Congo with your dad. Your dad's a nut. But apparently some of these kids did, and now they're fucked. Are they still in jail?
Yeah, at least one of them is. The son and then this other kid, this other Tyler Higbee. His like parents talked to the news the other day. It was really
Let's wild. See what's going on with these. And by the way, how do you let your kid go? My son went to the Congo.
It was supposed to be a family trip to Africa, but it turned deadly over the weekend. Rebecca Higbee says her son, Tyler Thompson, was invited to travel through several countries in Africa with his longtime friend, Marcel Malanga.
My son, Tyler, has been friends with Marcel for years. They've been playing football together. And every summer, Marcel would go see his dad, just like any divorced couple. He would go spend summers with his dad in Africa.
Marcel is the son of Christian Malanga, the man killed in a shootout after an alleged attack on the Congolese presidential palace. Higbee says Malanga was shot in front of her son and Marcel. Since then, they've been trying to get any information about Thompson. They've been searching online, and the images they've seen have them frightened.
We just see images, and every time we see an image, my son seems more.
You know, these two lesbos were so excited that their kid was going to Africa. You know, they were so excited, these lesbians, when he's like, I'm going to Africa. They told everyone in the community. They told everybody in the fucking community. They were walking up and down the streets going, our son's in Africa. He's in the Congo right now. Our son's in the Congo. They brought it up at every party. They brought it up at every fucking bakery. They come in. Oh, yeah, we need a cake. And, our son, it won't be for our son, actually. He's in the Congo. He's in the Congo. And they thought it was great. But, you know, if you overthrow a government, you got to win. That's part of it. If you try for a coup, you got to win. Like when the CIA killed President Kennedy and installed Johnson, they succeeded. Had they not succeeded, it wouldn't have been good. But they were, they succeeded. They planned and they executed. This guy's got a bunch of, what are they, college kids? High school, college?
Yeah, 21, high school. 22, yeah.
Or college, okay. He's got a bunch of college kids trying to take over. And that makes me think, can you do that? Can you take over like a little small African nation with a bunch of college kids? Because that's going to be the next thing. Everyone's going to be like, we all got priced out of New York and L.A. We just take over a small African nation. I mean, that is really the way to be rich. The way to be rich is to go to Africa. That is the way to be rich. It's like the old school way to be rich. Really. And I know that some people are going to find this insensitive culturally, but it is to go to Africa is the, you know, everyone's like, you go to the Hamptons and Palm Beach and Malibu. Yeah. Still laws. They're still going to tell you what to do. They're still going to tell you what to do. They're still going to tell you what to do. But if you go to Africa and you set yourself up right, there is nothing you cannot do and nothing you cannot have. Truly, if you set yourself up right in Africa, You're a warlord. You're the government. If you, like, I don't know. I don't think I have enough money to be an African warlord. But I think if I, you know, when you think about it, because that's what this guy wanted to do. This guy was like, I've been living here, but I'm not where I want to be. I'm going to get my son and a few of his friends, and we're going to overthrow this goddamn government. Did they even get close? Play the rest of this. Did they get close? Probably not.
Like, wrist looks broken, nose looks broken.
Miranda Thompson is Tyler's stepmother. She says Tyler was scrapbooking his trips to Africa, showing off their visit to Johannesburg and the restaurants they visited in Swaziland. The last communication he sent to his mother was that he loved her. But since Sunday, no.
By the way, I bet the guy who got shot was so charismatic. I have been led to do crazy things by the charismatic parents of my friends. I was in two boating accidents with Bud Munster, who I thought was great. I used to drink so much with my friends' parents. They could get you to do anything. Really, I remember I was driving home once from a bar, and I sideswiped this parked car. I was like, what the fuck? And Bud Munster and Claire, my friend's parents, were in the back. They go, keep going, keep going. I was just driving fast, cigarette in my mouth. I finally got to their house. I ran out of the car and ran into the back room. But these are the types of things that if you're a charismatic parent, you can really convince me. I wonder if these kids didn't know what was going on until they got there. He's probably, they're getting drunk. They're getting Congo drunk, which is a different thing. They're really fucked up. And he goes, listen, we're going to overthrow this government. We're going to be kings. We're going to be kings. And I bet there was a minute in, and they're all alive, right? These kids.
Yes, all the kids are alive.
This is a great lesson. And here's the thing. They were all probably relieved when the guy got shot because he was probably coming on real strong. He was probably very intense. The last few hours of that guy's life were very intense. And I've had this experience where, like, the fun dad gets dark. And when the fun dad gets dark, it's all over. And you know that. Like, when someone's fun dad, who you've been getting fucked up with all weekend, turns around and starts to say some really wild shit, and you're like, oh, I don't know about that. Really? Oh, Mr. Johnson, are you serious about all that stuff? You know, they start to go, there's a switch that flips. Because the fun dad can get really dark really quick. And I think this was the switch that flipped where he started looking at his son and his friends and going, we're going to overthrow this government. And I bet everybody's like, it started as a joke. Like, okay, we're gonna go up to the Congolese palace and what? And this guy was deadly serious, and he got shot in front of everybody. And they were relieved when he got shot. They were like, thank God, because that was rough. And that now they get put in jail, and I don't know what happens to them. Utah parents terrified.
We don't know where he is. We don't know what he's doing, what he's going through. We're just terrified.
For now, they can only wait for any news from the State Department.
I mean, we get to trust that it's their job, right? And that it's what they do, and their job is to look after American citizens. And
what an interesting take, by the way. what an interesting take. It's like, this is the problem with institutionalists. She's like, well, we just have to trust that it's their job, and their job is to look after Americans. Your son tried to overthrow the government of the Congo. The State Department's job's kind of to, like, ignore that. What are they going to do? Your son was involved in a coup attempt. They don't give a shit. Well, it's their job. It's the State Department's job. I'm sure they deal with this all the time. I'm sure they deal with people from Utah accidentally doing a coup all the time. And we just have to be, you know, we just have to have faith and trust. Dude, the State Department is busy with all this shit going on with Israel right now. Can you imagine knocking on? Hi, are we doing anything about the Utah teenager who's stuck in the Congo? Hey, get the fuck out of my office. Okay, how about you get the fuck out of my office, okay? I'm on the fuck up to my head in fucking Rafah. I got incursions. I got headless babe. Everybody's bleeding. You think I give a shit about a retard from Utah trying to overthrow the government of the fucking Congo? I hope they kill him. And I hope they use that fucking thing where they smear honey all over you and let fire ants eat you, or bees or something. I read about that. I don't know if that's what they actually do or if it's sort of a racist thing that I was reading. But The point is, it's a cool punishment nonetheless, but nobody at the State Department, this is not priority one. Russia, Ukraine, China, Israel, Palestine, and then these fucking lesbos. Sorry, ladies. This is their job. I'm sure they're really concerned about our son there. This is their job, isn't it? Isn't this what they do? That's not what their job is at the State Department. Someone should explain to these women that's absolutely not their job at the State Department. That is not their job. Their job at the State Department is to try to figure out how to say that Rafah attack was caused by lightning, like a heat storm. That's their job at the State Department. They're sitting around going like, well, what if there was just, could we engineer footage of lightning striking that camp? Maybe lightning struck a pile of ammunition. Well, have you ever heard of an electrical storm? They're actually quite powerful. That's their job at the State Department. Not this, but anyway, let's finish this up.
But literally all we can do at this point is trust that they are going to do that job.
Yeah, it's sad. Well, here's the good news. If the kids get out of jail, they have learned a humongous lesson. It is a lesson that you'll never learn at summer camp. You learn you cannot trust a charismatic psychopath. Because Bud Munster said to me once, this was after the second boating accident. He said, you have to stop hanging out with me. I'm trying to kill myself. And I kind of internalized that. And I was like, oh, I see. Charismatic people can get you killed. Charismatic people can get you killed. Most people suck, so they cannot convince you to do anything. Really, they can't. Most people are just like, hello. Who's that? Christian Milonga?
Yeah, and his son.
Yeah, that guy was an intense guy. But I bet he was fun. Get a close-up on him. Yeah. Yeah. That guy's a charismatic guy. He is a charismatic individual. And he convinced his son's friends to go to the Congo and try to overthrow a government. Not all at once, by the way. He was just like, you come to Africa. You learn how to be man. You learn how to be man in Africa. You in America, you're all faggot, but you come here, you learn to be man. And they're like, what does that mean? They don't know. They think it's going to be fun. They think it's going to be like American Ninja Warrior. But instead, this guy gets shot in the head in front of them. But I'll tell you this, you learn the limits of, and you got to ask for the receipts a little. I guess that's what you learn after you've watched your friend's father get killed in a failed coup attempt. If you make it out of the Congo prison, which, by the way, they might not, and our government should spend zero time trying to make that happen. Like, literally, the effort they should be one phone call to the Congo. You go, hey, how do you feel? How do you feel about this? We'll give you a couple of bucks, nothing crazy. We'll give you a couple of bucks. We'll send you, like, 10 Gs, something like that. If you let this guy out, we got too much going on. And they should tell the mother that. They should tell the two lesbians that. They should tell them, they should go, we got a lot going on. Like, they probably call the State Department every day going like, hey, what's the deal with our son? And then you go, hey, lady, I don't know if you've heard, but we got a lot going on. We got a lot going on. It's getting real hot out there. And we don't know where your son is. We haven't heard from your son. If we hear from him, we'll pass a message along. But we're busy. And they may never see him again. And that is sad. This is 2024. You've got two lovely lesbians who have an adopted son who then goes to the Congo with his best friend's father and ends up imprisoned because of a failed coup attempt. It's so 2024. It really is. And they were happy about it. Oh, he's in Africa. Well, he's in Africa. I think he's doing aid work or helping. We don't know. But, you know, that's what happens. Cracker Barrel's in trouble. The CEO is on an investor call. The stock is plummeting. The chain restaurant and talks to be redesigned. What does it mean for the country-themed restaurant? I think the problem with the Cracker Barrel is you really do feel when you're sitting in it like you're at a Klan rally. It's not the most... people don't mind being white trash. They don't want to feel like white trash all the time. And the Cracker Barrel aesthetic is kind of a garbage person aesthetic. It's just a, you know, it's a mythology about, like, what it's like when you're living off the land. Everything's real simple here at Cracker Barrel. Come on in and get a home-cooked meal at Cracker Barrel. And what it really is a dump. And good pancakes are good. The food's actually decent. It's okay. But it needs to step up to the new kind of more modern fascistic thing. We can do modern fascistic because that will be a genre of restaurant. It's like a fascist modern place. But you gotta get rid of this fucking like hearth and these old fucking skis on the fucking walls. Get rid of all this crap. Get rid of the bear skins and the fucking, you know, these weird contraptions. You got to design a modern, patriotic place where you can say, I'm a modern patriot. I don't ask no questions. Give me my chicken. Give me my chicken. I don't want to know nothing about nothing. Give me my chicken. I support the military in everything they do, in everything they will maybe do. War is good for the soul. That's what it should say when you go to Cracker Barrel. It should say war is good for the soul on the wall. Cracker Barrel, by the way, should just be to get you ready for war as a restaurant. It should be what Fox News is, where it just gets you ready for war. And MSNBC is actually starting to do that now, too. Most of our cultural institutions in the country have just decided that their main function is just to prepare the population for war. So what Cracker Barrel, like, the menu should just say rations. They should say rations on it. And your waiter should come over and say, God bless America. Every sacrifice is remembered here at Cracker Barrel. Like, it should just get you ready to go and die somewhere. That's the theme of the Cracker Barrel restaurant. And I think that it needs to be redesigned so it kind of look like they should just have TVs with military flyovers where you just see the planes like flying over football games. You should get out of Cracker Barrel and punch your wife in the face because you're so revved up. You're so revved up, you should come out of Cracker Barrel and commit a random hate crime. You should just commit a random hate crime at a rest stop when you walk out of Cracker Barrel. That's the point of Cracker Barrel. You get out of there ready to fight. You're ready to fight because that's what this country's about. It's about war. They just got to retool it a little bit. They got to retool it. What is the CEO saying? What's his plan? Does he agree with me?
It's a she. She said that they're not.
What? I've located one of the problems. It's a she. That's a problem. Cracker Barrel says, CEO, we're not as relevant as we once were. The 54-year-old roadside eatery with its old country store and down-home menu of chicken fried steak grits and hash brown casserole has been steadily losing customers for the past decade. They want to start refreshing the interior and exterior with a different color palette. They got to go hard in there. They got to remind people what this country's about. Killing for God. That's what Cracker Barrel should be about. Killing people for God. Jesus. The white one. Cracker Barrel should be about killing. You raise a family until they're old enough to kill. And then you send them. You unleash them on the world. We're just not as relevant as we once were, Chief Executive Julie Fels-Massino, who took the helm of the company 9 months ago, said, some of our recipes and processes haven't evolved in decades. Well, figure it out, or you're going the way of Red Lobster. Cracker Barrel is a rest stop meth dungeon. It really is. There's zero reason to eat at Cracker Barrel, really, unless you're like, it's where human traffickers like take a break and eat a little bit, but it can be redesigned as a fascist place, as an American fascist eatery. This is the ex-president of Taco Bell, this woman?
She was an executive that did wonderful things at Taco Bell, and so now she's Cracker Barrel.
Well, here's what Taco Bell's done. What Taco Bell's done is consistently aimed for, like, junkies. That's what Taco Bell does. They use bright colors, and they use the same five ingredients, but it's for junkies. It's marketed to junkies. It's marketed to stoners. It's marketed to people that are out late at night, drunks. They didn't try to be healthy. They didn't try to do any of that shit. The cantina menu's fake. They are, their bread and butter is people that are out at 1 o'clock in the morning, and they know it. They know it. This is the woman in the meetings when they say, should we try to appeal to people? She goes, absolutely not. We will lose this company if we try to appeal to people. She's got to be the one in the meeting that has the balls when they say, should we make Cracker Barrel more inclusive or more diverse? She's got to go, no, actually, it should go the other way. It should be the scariest restaurant in this country. We should literally put on our website, we're the home of traditional values. There should be a picture of Donald Trump, a picture of Jesus, and a picture of ribs. And that's what they should do. That's their brand. Lean into it. No DEI Cracker Barrel. You're going back to basics. We are a restaurant for white people who are going to send their children to go die in Iraq or something before they have a chance to get addicted to drugs at home. It's the last meal you have before you drop your kids at Fort Bragg. That's Cracker Barrel. It is the last meal you have before you drop your children to go die with honor. That's what you're going to do. You're going to die with honor, son, because we've seen your mother's medicine cabinet. There's a few things missing, and we know you've been drinking and hanging out with that Spanish girl. So guess where you're going? Wherever the government says. Wherever the government says, you're going. And we're going to have a nice family meal at Cracker Barrel, and then we're going to drop you off, and then you're going to go shoot a baby in its face, because that's what you're doing. Go die with honor at Cracker Barrel. Here at Cracker Barrel, we understand that everybody can be a little bit of a problem, even the youngins. Ain't that right, Israel? Cracker Barrel stands with Israel. Cracker Barrel should come out and stand with Israel. Right after the Rafah attack, Cracker Barrel should say a lot of restaurants puss out when things get tough. But here at Cracker Barrel, we know what being an ally means. And we don't mean an ally to those fucking dog mask wearing faggots in San Francisco. We mean an ally to Israel. Israel's getting ready for the coming of Jesus Christ. He's coming back. And they're clearing the land. Clearing the land to prepare for the Lord Jesus to come back. So here at Israel, here at Cracker Barrel, if you come in here and you can prove you're a Zionist, you get a free slice of pie, kosher pie. Come on down to Cracker Barrel. Casualties happen. They should be out in front. Because all these New York City Jews would never be caught dead in a Cracker Barrel. Flip the script. Flip the script. Cracker Barrel should be targeting here at Cracker Barrel. It's come to our attention. Most people don't even know what Zionism is. We're giving a course on it. So if you come to our Cracker Barrel, our prefix four-course dinner, one of our wait staff will explain to you the necessity of keeping the Holy Land holy for the return of Christ, no matter what. Come on down to Cracker Barrel, and in four courses of food, we'll tell you what needs to be done. We'll tell you what needs to be done. I don't care how you pronounce it. Rafa, Rafa, it's all bad to me. Get ready. Cracker Barrel's coming. Cracker Barrel, they should sponsor the Israeli war. Cracker Barrel is the official sponsor of Israel's war in Gaza. Sending biscuits to Netanyahu. Cracker Barrel, some call it a genocide. We call it goody. Some say it's a genocide. We say it's good eating. Here at Cracker Barrel, we think, what if drones could deliver gravy? What kind of world would we be living in? A much better world than the one we live in now. Here at Cracker Barrel, there's nothing better than a man marrying his own daughter. Cracker Barrel, we believe in incest and Jews. Cracker Barrel. That's what they should do. If you want to have sex with your own child, you bring him to Cracker Barrel. Get married to your own child at Cracker Barrel. There's nothing wrong with it. Cracker Barrel. I mean, listen, what if they became the official restaurant of pedophiles? We're the official restaurant of alternative lifestyles. Cracker Barrel. For minor attracted persons. Maps. Maps get really hassled in this country. Come on down to Cracker Barrel. Ain't nobody gonna rat on you. Come on down and get a good down-home meatloaf with your boy or girl. If you're a minor attracted person, there's a lot of judgment in society, but not here at Cracker Barrel, the official restaurant for MAPS, minor attracted people. These should all be pitched as brand alternatives to like home-style family. Here's the thing. There's no more home-style family shit. Everyone's on meth. Everything, every little small town is like a meth dungeon. It's a meth factory. The rivers are polluted. None of the hunting and fishing, that's all over. So you can turn it into a fascist war factory, or you could make it a place for, like, minor attracted people, MAPS, and people that are into incest. It's at rest stops, Cracker Barrel. We know where it is, right? It's a side-of-the-road restaurant. You don't have a lot of options. You can't make it. No one's getting a shellfish tower at Cracker Barrel. Make it a restaurant for pedophiles. Come on down to Cracker Barrel. We don't ask no questions except how much money you want to save on our dinner. Cracker Barrel, for minor-attracted persons.
Hi, my name is Jules, and we've done a lot at Taco Bell by focusing on feeding junkies. We thought it would be very interesting if we just played around with the idea of just alluding very vaguely to incest in some of the commercials and kind of targeting minor attracted people. That's all. And it doesn't have to be explicit. Maybe it's a father kind of smiling at his daughter while he cuts the pancakes or... Again, America's going to have... Listen, don't get mad at me. America's going to a very dark place, and I'm the CEO of this company, and I don't want to lose. I hate losing. My name is Jules Fells Messino, and I hate losing. So I just want to point this company in the direction where we can win. There's a lot of pedophiles. There's a lot of people having sex with their own kids, and they need to eat.
Here at Cracker Barrel.
They got to think about things like this. That's what, listen, the demographics in this country are not going to be the old demographics. People are becoming monsters. You're going to have to cater to them. It's going to be a reality. You're going to have to cater to like people that are not great. They're not ideal. They're not what you would want. They're not what you would want. Okay, so I'm not saying which ones you have to do. I'm just saying you're going to have to make a choice. Taco Bell made the right choice to go junkies. People that are on drugs. That's who eats here. People that are drunk and they're on drugs. They drink and they use drugs to make themselves happy. And they need cheap food that is colorful and quick. They don't want to wait. They have bad impulse control, which is why they're eating here. So we need to get something warm in their hand in 5 minutes before they start to fight each other. That's the way Taco Bell works. Hot in their hand within 5 minutes. Most of them are in their cars and they're drunk. So they will start fighting with the car behind them if the food is not out in time. It is for drug addicts who are coming home from a night of drinking and using drugs. That is Taco Bell. I've been there many a night. That's who it is. We're all drug addicts in that drive-thru. We're junkies. We're drunks. We're not good people. We're not coming from the fucking whatever it is. You know, we're not coming from the food bank. We're not coming from the – we're coming from a place where we were drinking and using drugs, and now we're at Taco Bell, and we're eating this gooey crap in the back of the car. You're like an animal, and you're going – and you're eating all this shit, and then you fall asleep, and you wake up in the middle of the night, and you feel this – like this – lava in your chest. And a lot of times it's called acid reflux. It comes up through your esophagus and you wake up with it. And then you like, you'll run to the bathroom and start spitting it out until eventually you just actually go, you know what it is. And you just swallow it. You like wake up in the middle of the night. And you go, oh, that's the lava. It's like the food. 'Cause your body doesn't want the food. Your body goes, no, this wasn't food. and your body goes, expel it. It's not food. If you've ever watched what they do in Taco Bell, the things they use aren't even utensils. It's like a weird, like, thing that just flips the quesadilla over. It's not a knife. It's not a fork. It's like this weird lever they use to just, and it's all just, things of sauce. They squirt and then like pastes. But it's not food. Nothing looks like food. You can't identify when something's been a food. So the human body, after it's in there, immediately starts panicking. You just panic. If you eat a lot of Taco Bell quick, your body panics. It doesn't know what's happening. And you'll be in the car and you have this real thick, like, feeling of this, you feel really bad really quickly. And then if you go to bed with that food in the middle of the night, you wake up with what they call acid reflux. And it's just that food that is not really breaking down because the body doesn't want it. And it just comes up in your throat and you feel it. It's holding in your throat. And then you get so used to it, you just wake up. And this is when you know you're a fat slob. You wake up and you go, oh, that's just the bile in my stomach trying to escape. And then you go, nope, and you swallow it and go, nope. You go back in. Taco Bell, I've eaten at Taco Bell more consistently than any other restaurant in my life. I know Taco Bell I know Taco Bell in the 90s. I know Taco Bell. I know everything about it. And I know this bitch. And I know what she did for Taco Bell. They have resisted every single change that every other fast food restaurant made. Dan Soder, a good friend of mine, has a great joke about this. Dan Soder's joke is because McDonald's, they were trying to be like, no, we're healthy. And then Dan Soder, they're like, Taco Bell? And they're like, nope, we're crunchy. Like they know what they're doing. It's words that drug addicts can understand. That's what Taco Bell does. And the food is so what Cracker Barrel has to do is choose a course. Like Red Lobster chose a course. It was black people who were leaving church. That's who it was. And I love Red Lobster. And I like black people who leave church. And I like a lot of the things they're going to eat. But that was the Red Lobster's choice. They had a demographic choice. Okay? It's like Fridays. Fridays for a while, like their choice, it was like, they went with like teachers. Because, like, the whole idea of, like, thank God it's Fridays, like, attracted, like, these... It was, like, a weird cringe thing. It was, like, a teacher vibe. Or, like, middle management, lower-level corporate, cheap suit marketing dirtbag people that would show up and, like, get the Jack Daniels platter, get the appetizer platter, and, like, get, like, a margarita at Fridays. And, like, thank God it's Friday. And the bartender would pretend to flirt with them. And they'd be like, you're in again. Some guy would walk in. He'd be like, you're in again, huh? And she'd be like, yeah, I didn't see you last week. And he'd be like, well, I was working. Or I was saying I was working. Like, it's one of those. And that's who Fridays had. Like, the weird dad types who would flirt with the bartender. Red Lobster had church people on Sundays. Taco Bell had the junkies. You gotta choose. Outback had like families of 12. Like families of 12 people where like people would go into Outback Steakhouse and they would bring blankets and pillows and cribs and like it would be their home for 2 hours. Outback just courted like very large families. They had like the largest families I've ever seen would go to the Outback Steakhouse. Like white trash families. But I think Cracker Barrel needs to make a decision. These theme restaurants tell us more about our lives and our culture than museums. So if you think I spend too much time on them, fuck off. They tell us more about who we are than the Guggenheim for the average person means nothing. It means people would get on my tour bus. They go, what museum should we go to? I said, stop it. It means going to the Met and seeing the Temple of Dunder. It means nothing to you. It means nothing. Go to Charlie O's. It's a nice little cheap steakhouse in Penn Station. And go see a Ranger game. Go to Charlie O's. Theme restaurants tell us who we are as a people. Museums don't. Academic institutions barely do. Politics sort of does. Theme restaurants. You will learn everything you need to know about America by visiting like an Applebee's on a Wednesday night and just sitting there. You will learn everything you need to learn about everybody and about this whole cut. You will need nothing else. You won't need a poll from Nate Silver, 538. You will need nothing else. You eat a meal at Applebee's, you walk to your car, and you get it. Immediately, you get it. You understand the whole thing. The whole thing. The food that doesn't make any sense. Bourbon fajita patty burgers. It doesn't make sense. The food, they had fajita burgers at Applebee's at one point. It's a burger and a fajita. It's party down. Eating good in the neighborhood, and it's not good. Oh, it is not good. It's worse than frozen food that you would just buy and eat. But you will learn so much about, and the people talk to you too. You go, so, you know, you can say to them, like, oh, you're working a lot, and they'll tell you, they'll just be like, well, I'm only on 2 days this week. They go, I'm going to school. I want to be a dental hygienist. My mother took her own life. My brother's on the lam from the law. My mother killed herself. She couldn't really deal with that. I work 2 days a week. I want to be a dental hygienist, you know? And you go, oh, thank you. Can I have the fajita burger? What's good today? The fajita burger. What is it? They go, I don't know. They'll tell you, too. They go, I don't really know what that one is. I think it's a burger and a fajita. They'll giggle. Go, all right, I'll have that. They go, yeah, we just serve it with 7 sauces. Whichever one you want. Just put anything on it. Put anything on it. We're all in hell. We're all in hell here. Sir, are you a MAP? If you're a MAP, you get a free dessert. Are you? If you're a no-contact MAP, we want to show our appreciation by giving you a free dessert. So if you are a dormant pedophile, we have a free dessert for you if you're a no-contact MAP. Well, they shot another guy in Minneapolis. Very sad. This is a cop who was killed in Minneapolis. Minneapolis is really a fucking dump. It's sad. This guy, Jamal, what was his last name? Mitchell. Jamal Mitchell goes in. He's ambushed. He's killed. He was a father. He was recognized for saving 2 elderly people from their burning home on his 3rd day in the job. And the guy's ambushed and killed. And, you know, this is an absolute tragedy. It's one of the saddest things I've read. And the people of Minnesota consistently vote for this type of shit. They vote for defunding cops. They vote for making it easier for criminals. It's a disgusting place. The people there are disgusting, pale, white demons from hell. And this is the way they want to live. And they live in little igloos. And that's what they do. And they're disgusting. Good pancakes there for whatever reason, I don't know. But they consistently get the people killed that they supposedly care about. And this guy is a hero. And he, you know, I hope there's a GoFundMe or something. We'll donate to it for his family. It's absolutely insane. And hopefully the people of Minnesota stop behaving like this. I mean, he's like the 3rd or 4th cop to get killed in a while. But again, they just constantly don't want to live in a civil society, the people of Minnesota and the Great Lakes region. They do not want to live in a civil society. I don't know why that is about. I don't know why they do not want to live in a civil society. But I've talked to many of them when I'm there, and this is what they do not want it. They do not like civilization, and they are the enemies of it in Minnesota. They're the enemies of civilization. In Minneapolis, Minnesota. That's just what it is. They are the enemies. They are the enemies. There's a few good ones that come to the casino to see me every couple of years, and I like them. Those are the good ones. But you know who you are out there, enemies of civilization trying to destroy the earth. You know who you are. And a lot of you live in Minnesota, Minneapolis, Minnesota. There's something wrong there. It snows for like 10 months. And these gaunt white demons just keep trying to ruin everything. And they, I don't know. Now they're seeing, this is pretty crazy. This situation down there is pretty crazy. You know, and listen, this is where the Floyd thing went down, which, you know, obviously was not good. We're not saying that
We want that happening, but we also just can't have cops getting ambushed and killed. You can't have cops getting ambushed and killed. This isn't safe for anybody. And I just have nothing. I have nothing good to say about Minneapolis, Minnesota. I've never met a person from there that I've liked. I have never visited it once and went, wow, thank God I'm here. It is just gross. Truly. Am I wrong? Oh, you have a lake? Oh, is a lake nice? Shut up. We'll smack you with the Pacific Ocean or the Atlantic. We don't need that part of the country. It's got to go. That gaunt white folk. Oh, shucks. I'm a folksy white. Oh, shucks. Look at me. I'm from Minneapolis. Die and burn in hell. You are demons. They are. They are demons. They're demonic, these people. They're disgusting. It would be great to announce a show there right now. I would love to. And I would sell it because they know. The people that agree with me know. We have nothing left, folks. We have everything's the Comedy Store. It's the last time I'm going to be in L.A. for a while. I'm going to the Hamptons for the summer. Fuck off. Ryman Auditorium, Nashville, Tennessee, and Des Plaines, Illinois. They keep yelling at me. I got to keep plugging this. November 2nd. I mean, well, leave me alone. They keep screaming at me. These agents yell and scream. Des Plaines, Illinois, the event center at Rivers Casino right before the election. Come on down, please, to see me. To see me. We're here on Patreon every week. We'll see everybody next week. Hold your head, Donald. Hold your head, sir. Can we get Donald Trump saying cash before we leave to play us out? Let's get Donald J. Trump. You might be on the fence about this guy, but when they say, what's a collateral for your bond, and he says cash and then walks away. Good night, everyone. And we're going to play off with Donald Cash Trump.
We appreciate very much the decision of the appellate division. Thank you very much.
What's your collateral for the bond?
Cash.